Hello, and welcome to There's Hope with Homeopathy. This monthly show airs the third Friday of each month and focuses on classical homeopathic treatment, how it can benefit your entire family, and especially how it can be a curative therapy in the treatment of autism. Well, my name's Amy Lansky, and I'm broadcasting today, as always, from Portola Valley, California, which is right near Stanford in the San Francisco Bay Area. Today's show is going to air on January 19th, 2007. So, Happy New Year! It's a new year, and hopefully it's going to be a better one for our world and for all of you and your families. You know, I'm sure many of us are thinking, I know I am, about what's going on in the world today. You know, of course, what's going on politically, all the wars and strife and that's going on in the world. Also, you know, all the talk about diseases, pandemics, the flu, bird flu, all this and that. And especially, I don't know about you, but it's really on my mind, the issues of global warming, what that's going to mean for our children, for us as we age, how the world is going to change. It's a scary time in many ways. On the other hand, I think it's really important that the best way we personally can deal with this is by maintaining a higher attitude, an attitude of love, an attitude of viewing mankind as one, and knowing that perhaps because of these changes, the world will unite and become as one, which we are, of course, because the changes with global warming, the rising sea levels, these will know no boundaries. And everybody's going to have to work together to survive. This is my view, anyway. But in the midst of all this, of course, this show is about homeopathy, and I feel much more confident about surviving in the new world because of homeopathy. It has so much to offer in times of emergencies, in times of epidemic diseases, and even in times of war. Just as a small example, for example, homeopathy was very useful for the survivors of the tsunami a couple years ago. There were actually groups of homeopaths that went to the region. I think some of them actually are still there helping people. And although they were a somewhat marginalized group of health professionals, because after all, you know, the dominant force would be allopathy, you know, in that sphere, in any sphere of emergency relief medicine. There were homeopathic outposts, and from what I've heard and what was reported, many of the people preferred to go to the homeopaths. They were getting help because the remedies were helping not just with, like, first aid, things like that, but also with emotional help, which was really the key thing for these people surviving the horrors of losing their family and losing everything they had. And homeopathy has a lot to offer to help people get through emotional times like that. So that brings me to something else. I always make a plug here for the National Center for Homeopathy. I'm on the board of that organization. And the National Center really is sort of the mothership of homeopathy in the United States. It holds all of the homeopaths together. It puts together the one joint homeopathic conference each year, which is both a professional conference and a conference open to the general public. And the NCH, as part of its programs, started last year a seminar series, a weekend, you know, workshop type thing that goes around the country. Last year there were two installations of this workshop, and the name of the workshop, apropos to what I was just talking about, is First Response Homeopathy: Disasters, Epidemics, and Emergencies. So this is a weekend seminar taught by experienced homeopaths who will teach you the remedies, homeopathic approach to these kinds of situations. Now, this year, there's going to be two seminars, and I'm not sure where the second one is. I think it might be in Ohio, but the first one is in San Diego, the weekend of May 18th through 20th. So if you live in the San Diego area, you might really be interested in attending this seminar. So to find out about the National Center for Homeopathy, just go to nationalcenterforhomeopathy.org. This extensive website of the NCH, and actually I'm the board member in charge of the website, and I've been working for over a year on a complete overhaul of this website. So hopefully, maybe even by my next show in February, the new show will be live. I'm not sure, but it's going to be sometime in the next 2-3 months. And I hope you all like it. It's much more modern site than what's currently up there. Yet there's still tons of stuff up there. So go to that URL, nationalcenterforhomeopathy.org, and you can find out about the On the Road seminars, as well as the National Conference, which this year is going to be in Denver in April 13th through 17th, although it's especially starts... The key part of the conference starts the evening of April 13th and then is Saturday, Sunday, April 14th and 15th. Okay, well, let's get on to today's show. First, I'll tell you what it's about. Today's one of the interview shows, and I'm going to be interviewing Pierre Fontaine, who is a homeopath from the New York area. He has an office in Manhattan, but he also has offices on Long Island. And actually, I met Pierre a couple years ago at an NCH conference. We both gave a joint talk on homeopathic treatment of autism. He's a very thoughtful man, which I'm sure you'll love to hear about his practice. In the February show, I've been sort of alternating between interviews and just information about homeopathy. I plan in the February show to start talking about part of the content of Chapter 6 in my book, and I'll talk about my book in a second, about different methodologies of homeopathy. And I know many of you will be interested in this because many homeopaths who treat autism sometimes use these different methods of homeopathy. This includes isopathy, what's called tautopathy, which is, most people use the word isopathy for tautopathy. I'll teach you about the difference between those. Also, sequential homeopathy, the use of specifics, what homeopaths call specifics, etc. So I will talk about these different methods of homeopathy. Also, it may be a two-part series. I may also talk about practices that are sometimes associated with homeopathy but aren't really homeopathy. So I'll be talking about all of that. Now, as I mentioned, the content of that show and the show about different methodologies of homeopathy can be found in Chapter 6 of my book, Impossible Cure, The Promise of Homeopathy. And as all of you know who've listened to the show before, this book is the basis of this show. So you can find out about Impossible Cure by going to the book website, which is impossiblecure.com. And for any of you who is a parent of an autistic child, and really any person who's interested in homeopathic medicine, should buy and read this book, which is now the best-selling book on homeopathy at Amazon most weeks. It is a general introduction to homeopathy. And it's even used as a first-year textbook at the homeopathic schools. It's very comprehensive. It is not a how-to book, however, but it will teach you pretty much everything you ever wanted to know about homeopathy, except specifically, you know, the remedies. But many, many practitioners recommend this book to their patients, especially practitioners who treat autistic children, because the book includes a chapter about how my son, Max, was cured of autism with homeopathy, and that's why I'm here today, and that's how I got here. At the ImpossibleCure.com website, you'll find lots of resources. There is a page on treatment of autism. There are referrals to homeopaths. There's past archives of this show, which I highly recommend that if you're listening to this, that you go back and listen to all the previous shows, because really the show is like a short course on homeopathy. There's the Cure Stories database, a database of cure stories, not just of autism, but other interesting cure stories that people have contributed to the site, and I really welcome you to contribute any story of your own, big or small. You can find out how to order Impossible Cure, including how to make bulk orders at a discount. And also, I really welcome you to email me, just to send an email to Lansky at ImpossibleCure.com or Lansky at AutismOne.org. Doesn't matter where you send it, though, because it just comes to me, same address, which is Lansky at ImpossibleCure.com. I also welcome you to send me questions about homeopathy, ask for referrals, or give me ideas for future shows or things you'd like to hear about. So always feel free to email me. I respond to all emails usually within just a couple days, but sometimes it takes me a week to get around to it. But I've never not responded to an email sent to me, so I really welcome that. So, without further ado then, let's get on to today's show. And I am going to, before I bring on Pierre, I'll just tell you a little bit about him. He'll tell you about himself as well. But Pierre is a professional homeopath, which means he's not a licensed medical practitioner, but he is a certified classical homeopath who studied with the Devon School of Homeopathy, which was also my school. So he's a registered member of the North American Society of Homeopaths and certified, as I said, by the Council on Homeopathic Certification. And before he started studying homeopathy, he spent 5 years investigating a whole bunch of different kinds of healthcare modalities, such as acupuncture, herbalism, vitamin therapy, Ayurveda. But he just wasn't drawn to any of these. He didn't find that they were satisfying to him. But once he found out about homeopathy, he just, as he said, it was love at first sight. He realized this was the mode of medicine that he found the most satisfying, that was going to be his calling. And he pursued the Devon program. You know, this is a correspondence distance program, but rather than doing that, he decided to actually do the course in England. This is where it's based, in Devon, England. And so he actually flew to England 1 week every 3 weeks for a year and a half to complete his coursework, which shows amazing dedication, I must say, and did the program right there in England. And so he's truly dedicated to homeopathy. And as I said, he is a very thoughtful man. He has lectured all over the place about homeopathy in the New York area, including in the SUNY system, the State University of New York, at St. John's University, at Queens College, Southampton College, Queensborough College, and many different organizations. He also was the host of a TV show called Homeopathic Times. And so now I'm going to pause the program and call up Pierre and bring him on the show. Be right there. Hello, Pierre.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
So welcome. You know, I told everybody we met a couple years ago. I guess it was almost a couple years ago when we did a joint talk on the homeopathic treatment of autism. Yeah. So, and you know, a lot of your practice is autistic kids, isn't it?
About half of it, yes.
Oh, half. That's a lot.
It's a lot. It's very, very intensive, and but it's at the same time it's quite varied. But about half is autism.
So tell me, how did you get interested in homeopathy to begin with?
It was a long road. It's a road that started with massage therapy, which was preceded by a childhood where I saw a lot of illness.
In your own family?
In my own family, particularly my father. An enormous amount of illness and images kind of imprinted in my brain. And so in my early adult life, I had sort of an attitude of burning bridges, if you will, until I came to basically a complete burnout, and I made a radical change in my life, which started with massage therapy, which started with a lot of meditation, introspection and all. And then that came about, I would say, over 20 years ago. After that, what happened is I was quite heavily involved in supplementation. Therapy with supplements and all.
Yes.
But that came to an end because it just didn't bring the results that I was looking for. And I research, if you will, like acupuncture and Ayurvedic medicine and so on and so forth. And I came to homeopathy, and it was truly love at first sight. I understood the principle absolutely instantaneously, and I never looked back.
That's what happens to a lot of people with homeopathy. It's very beautiful, very elegant, you know.
It was perfectly instinctual for me. I kept on looking and looking and looking. I said, there's got to be something better in a way. I came very, very close to enrolling to in a acupuncture school. And then came in the summer a lecture, and that was it. I mean, within a minute, I knew this was it. It was absolutely perfect.
So your background, having done this work with supplements, must be useful because of all the use of supplements in the autism world. You understand those things.
I understand those things. I don't put a tremendous amount of stock in that, in the sense that it's not as deep as homeopathy. And it tends to be palliative, meaning as long as you do it, it's okay. Homeopathy is deeper, which is why I'm doing homeopathy. That's why I practice it.
Yeah, that's hard for a lot of parents. You know, most people listening to the show are parents of autistic kids. It's hard for them to understand when I say, you know, that homeopathy is actually curative. It's not palliative. It's because we're so used to, you know, just taking medicines that just sort of keep us going, instead of looking for that true, deep, underlying cure, not just patching things over.
To keep us going is really the key thing, because if you just keep going with something, you're going to keep on buying it.
Yeah.
So it's a perfect business model, really, which is exactly what I thought about when I stopped doing supplements. In a way, it's perfect, but it isn't really for the patient.
Right. A lot of parents, you know, spend thousands of dollars on these supplements.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, so
I had someone call me today. That's exactly what she does with multiple problems. So someone last week, same thing. You know, with supplements. So supplements are very, very popular. When I was doing that, they were not popular. You could hardly find anything written on vitamin C, even. They are popular. They're part of the landscape, if you will, but they don't bring the results that we get in homeopathy.
I'm jumping ahead a little, but when a patient comes to you, an autistic patient, and is on supplements, what do you tell them as far as you know, what to do about the supplements when you're treating them homeopathically?
I don't say much.
I mean, do you have them go off, or do you have them just keep doing it?
I don't interfere with that, simply because if they're taking very large amounts, I don't even ask to lower. I just say that eventually they will lower, simply because the patient feels that they're not necessary. You see, the problem resolves and they're not so necessary.
Right.
Then you can really cut it down to one or two supplements, or, you know, various couple of things that come in a pill form, and that's essentially it.
interfere with the homeopathic remedies?
No. Again, they're not as deep, because the reason, it's only acting on, you know, at best on the cellular level. It's not as deep and profound like homeopathy is. Homeopathy resolves the problem, and the patient feels it, you see, rather than taking the pills as taking the supplement. Doesn't resolve the problem. Like we said, it keeps the patient going at best. What you also have to see as far as the supplements are concerned is that people tend to not be on supplements for a very, very extended period of time. Okay? It's something they do on the path of getting better. It's just one step, sort of like they do acupuncture, they'll do supplements, they'll do this, they'll do that, and then they come to homeopathy. And then things, hopefully, I mean, not in all cases, we can't make it all too rosy, but generally with homeopathy, things get better in a much deeper way, and the supplements are not so necessary.
So let's take a step back. Tell me a little bit about, you said 50% of your practice is autistic kids. Tell me about, like what kind of people you see in general, in addition. Do you see mostly families? Do you see, tell us about that.
The practice is very varied. Outside of the autistic population, and even within the autistic population, I tend to see children who have a lot of problems. I don't see too much on the lower spectrum, but more on the higher spectrum in terms of autism. And then the rest of the practice is absolutely varied. On Saturday, I had a new patient with scleroderma, a new patient with insomnia, a new patient with aphasia. It's very, very, very varied. It's all systems, a lot of menopause, a lot of premenstrual, a lot of GI type of problems, gastrointestinal problems, Crohn's disease, lupus. And you run the gamut. I think that's basically your homeopathic practice. You run the gamut of things, but clearly with an emphasis on autism.
Right.
Perhaps because my first case, my very, very first case, was that of an extreme case again of Rett syndrome, which is way far, beyond even the autistic spectrum. And that kind of set the tone, if you will, of the practice.
That must be amazing that it was your first patient walked in with Rett syndrome.
I didn't know better, really.
Did you have any success?
No success. I mean, this child was fully handicapped, but the child was having seizures, and that's the one thing we got rid of, the seizures.
Well, that's a blessing, at least.
Yeah, the parents were. It was a very delicate case in the sense that the parents needed to have a very deep relationship with their doctor. They were concerned for for close to a year that with medication and the seizures to this day actually are resolved. From time to time, talk with the people, and to this day it's completely resolved. But the rest there was. There's nothing that could have been done.
So tell us, when you have an autism family come in, tell us what that first appointment is like and what parents can expect and what's helpful for you that helps, what do you see that helps with your success? How can parents be more successful?
The first visit for autistic children, I do it differently than from the rest of the population. That is, for the rest of the population, I don't ask for anything. We start out cold, if you will. I know what the main complaint is, and that's about it. But for autistic children, again, because I tend to see on the higher end rather than the lower end, less feel more autistic than Asperger, and I ask for a full medical history that I get from through email. with anything regarding if there were any adverse reaction to vaccine and the whole bit. So full medical history, parents, grandparents, and the whole bit. I also asked for an essay on the child. In other words, who the child is and what we call stranger and peculiar in homeopathy. What is uncommon? You know, and I say, don't be afraid to belong. It's better to belong than short. Put anything, you know, if the child wakes up at night, put it down. If the child likes to do this or that or watch a particular episode of a video, put it down. If it's attracted to a color, put it down. Put anything down that will give me a picture, a sense of the child. And that's where I start. So I start a few days before. I read it, and I underline what is there that I find either strange or peculiar or interesting, and, you know, things that I would like to go deeper. I do it ahead of time. I do this, and I do this ahead of time because the children that I see tend to be on the very restless, tend to be very restless. And in the office, they don't do too well, you know?
Right.
So in order to cut the time down, that's what I do. Because after, you know, once you spend 45 minutes, an hour, and especially for children who haven't had ABA, who haven't had a whole lot of intervention, it's very, very difficult. So that's what I do. Some children will sit and without a problem, and that's great, you know. But that's how I start with this population. I like to have a preview, if you will. And then we go deeper, and they can add anything. And it's good for the parents to have something actually about their child. And also, after they've written it, they come in the office and they say, oh, I forgot about this, I forgot about that. And then you get some real gems actually coming out of that.
Do you have both parents come to the first appointment?
However parents can come, you know. A lot of these children come on Saturday, okay. And very often both parents can make it, but not all the time. It's always better. It's quite interesting to see the family dynamics, but in the end it doesn't bring all that much as far as picking interest to see.
Do you see any kind of particular ingredients for success, some patterns that you see from families who are more successful or less successful as far as like the dynamic of the family or what's going on or anything in particular that you think brings more success?
The one thing that is first and foremost, and without that, it's almost impossible to bring about improvement or even full success. So the absolutely necessary ingredient is patience. With that, nothing can be achieved. Nothing can be achieved. That is clear to me. Patience is first and foremost. And because I make it clear before I even see the child that this is a long-term issue. I can't think of anything out there, disease, that is a condition, whatever, that is as dramatic as autism, really. And that patience, there has to be patience. If parents stick with it, invariably, there will be improvement. If you don't stick with it, it's not possible. It's virtually not possible, you see.
And unfortunately, this sort of group of parents, this group of parents often tend to be very impatient because they're doing all these things. They're sort of frantic and you know, going crazy, you know, understandably. Do you treat the parents? How often do you try to treat the parents?
I don't treat the parents. I never impose certain sort of things. I don't try to treat the parents. I try to be very close to the parents, that's for sure. I'm on the phone almost constantly with parents. Too much on the phone is a problem. Not enough on the phone is a problem. Try to pick a happy medium kind of thing. Because too much on the phone will bring on, it just comes across as too hectic. It's too, the results should be now. Not enough on the phone is, well, a long period of time has passed and nothing has happened. So it's a proper, I try to strike a good balance between being supportive of the parents as well as not create a different state than what the family is about. So it is difficult. Well, obviously, whenever the parents call, I either return the call or talk to them and try to address all their cares and needs. And if the parents are willing to want to come in for treatment, that's fine. But I never impose anything, no.
Yeah. So tell me, what kind of responses do you often get? Do you see a certain pattern of response that's common among these kids, or is it completely individual? Do you see something that parents could look forward to?
Well, it's with homeopathy, it's always individualized. But what I see in general is a movement away from autistic quality. I'll give you some example. But if you will, the autistic qualities become less. And but with that, there may be some other behaviors that come about, because when a child gets better from an autistic point of view, sometimes tend to move into possibly more ADD type of behavior. But sometimes parents are not very happy. But I'll give you some example. I think last week I had a parent tell me, I don't understand, but yeah, my child is not better. That was a call after 2 weeks. And I had prescribed before several times. I don't understand, he's negotiating now. This is a child who was saying one or two word sentences. He's negotiating whether, you know, he wants one gluten-free cookie or two, you know, instead of three. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
As far as the homework, oh, give me 5 more minutes of, I don't know, Nintendo, and then I'll do the homework. Whereas before it was no, it was a fit, and so on. That is negotiating.
And the parents didn't see that this was an improvement.
No.
That's very common. You know, I often tell people, you should write in a notebook, like, once a month, like, a whole picture of what's going on so they can see the change, you know?
Yeah, it's strange, you know, because that is an improvement, you know. It really is an improvement. That is, the autistic quality is less. Negotiating, that's what a kid does.
Right, that's what's normal for a kid to do.
Restlessness, I've seen there's one kid that's really, really struck me some months ago, because before I received the couple with an autistic girl, before we could even turn around, we had hardly even said hello, that the child was already on top of my desk. I mean, within seconds, it was a tornado, and it stayed that way the whole visit. The father was constantly chasing after her. And it was major. I had never seen that. Now the child can sit. That's a major improvement. But again, you know, they acknowledged it was a major improvement. They were looking for other things could happen.
first step.
It's a first step, and it's really a step-by-step type of thing. A child that you could hardly touch, now is hugging. Okay, he's still not speaking. Well, at the time, you see, he was still not speaking. But the mother was I wanted to speak. Yeah, but the mother could not even touch him before, you see. So it's a lessening of things, and things, you know, kind of bloom. It comes to a bloom. It's not like, boom, it all happens at once.
Right.
It blooms. It flowers. And that's what, that's the pattern that we see, or that I see. Now, it's a blooming. It's certain qualities. Actually, it's what we call hair and low cure. The greater symptoms grow out first, then it blooms. And with that, patience is absolutely important, crucial, because the more the parents are willing to stick with it, the more blooming there will be and the better the child will be. Okay. That there is no doubt about.
It's interesting because, you know, the deepest things should resolve first. So for this child who was so restless that it was out of control, that was probably the deepest thing. They were like a whirling dervish. They couldn't even do anything but move. That has to resolve before somebody has the ability to focus and speak, you know. How can you speak when your mind is racing like that, right? So,
absolutely.
So, you know, the first thing they had to resolve for that girl was to settle herself somehow.
That's right.
Yeah. Or the same thing with being touched. If somebody is so withdrawn that they can't be touched, that has to resolve before you're willing to reach out and interact with somebody through speech, you know. So people have to see it as a progression from being in this completely isolated state of mind, whatever it is, through restlessness or something else, to reaching out and interacting with other people. I've often, people have said to me, you know, they're not speaking it, but now they're making eye contact or waving or something like that. It's like the first step to interact with other people. So.
Yeah. It's a developing. It develops. The improvement develops. And at times it stops too. I mean, let's be honest. At times it stops, and so we have to, you know, we have to look at the potency, we have to look at various different issues, and some, it may take 2, 3, 4 months to get the movement started again. It, you know, we can be on what I call the right track for months. No, all of a sudden things stop. I think that's a part of the nature of autism, where it's a difficult thing. And so it may take a few months to find a remedy that's going to make this child move forward again, and be, quote-unquote, back on the right track and move along. But when you see improvements like that, I mean, this child who you could not touch, then I see him, the mother is hugging him. I could hug the child, it was someone else who was taking care of the child. It melts your heart. It really does. It's incredible to see. It's absolute. That is unbelievable. You know, you don't want to get like teary in the consultation room, but you're like, damn, you know.
Yeah.
Good thing. It's a good thing. It really is.
That's so rewarding. That's why you do it. I know, Pierre. So. So tell me, you know, if a parent comes in and they want to do, this goes along with the impatience. I've heard about cases like this that were progressing, and then the parent was impatient and said, I want to do chelation or something like that. And have you found that those things interfere? What do you say?
I don't find chelation interfering. In any way, I tend to actually, if parents haven't done anything, I tend to recommend glutathione in terms of chelation. I try to steer away from either oral or intravenous chelation. Help
you don't worry about these things interfering. What about acupuncture? Because that's sort of more on that deeper level.
Acupuncture I'm not crazy about. I'll tell you why. The acupuncture in general, if you go to mainland China, only about 10 to 20% of the patients who go to what they call traditional medicine, whatever traditional medicine is acupuncture, only 20% of these patients actually get needles. 100% of the patients get what they call concoctions, which is bark, herbs, and so on and so forth, boiled down to one-third, two or three times a day. 100% of the patients get that.
So it's really herbalism.
It's really herbalism with some acupuncture. Then you take the plane, you come over here, 100% of the patients get needles, and maybe 10, 20% get concoction.
I see.
This is why I couldn't go to acupuncture. I couldn't resolve these differences, With homeopathy, if you go to India, it's practiced the same way. If you go to Western Europe, it's practiced the same way. But the principle remains the same. It's a completely different thing here. Completely different thing with acupuncture. How come the discrepancy?
Because Americans want the puncture. They want the acupuncture. That's the way they view it, so they want the needles.
Yeah, it's the mystery of the needle, really.
Yeah.
But that doesn't stand for much. I'm not debunking it, really. It doesn't combine with homeopathy too well. We're very, very aware in homeopathy of palliation, of suppression. We really keep this gold standard of cure, which is good. Whereas I tend to think that it's a little bit different with other modalities. So acupuncture, not crazy about. Supplementation, I don't have a problem. Chelation, I don't have a problem with. If it's well done, if it's gentle, I'm not sure about going in and disturbing a whole lot of heavy metals. I'm not crazy about that. I think it can bring on more problems. But if it's well done, in terms of supplement and chelation, I don't have a problem.
So what about, have you seen many older autistic children, like teenagers or young adults?
I have seen older children. I think the results can be as promising, but the key ingredient is, again, patience. I don't see parts of this population kind of resign. Okay, this is the way it's going to be. And so the patients tend to be, they try this, kind of like give it a wild shot. And, if they don't see results, it's, okay, let it go, because they're already resigned to the fact that the child is not responding. But I do think the results can be just as good. I would say that. Let's not be too positive here. Almost quite as good. There will be some things that will remain, but I don't see, like I used to. I used to say, well, it's too late, but I don't think so anymore.
Really? Yes.
Yeah.
So it's more like the parents are less likely to be as patient.
Yeah, but then again, I don't want, let's not blame the parent,
right.
But the, because I have nothing but admiration for this parent. Dealing with this has to be tremendous. But patience is absolutely a key ingredient, and I do think quite a lot of improvement can be brought upon for these children, even when they're teenagers. Yeah.
And what about I know a lot of people come in, they're very obsessed with detox because of the vaccine damage, this and that. What do you say to them to sort of try to get them out of this mindset that we have to get the metals out, you know, give isopathic remedies, this and that? I know this is sort of an obsession for many parents. How do you deal with that? What do you say to them?
Detox is the big kid on the block. I don't go against parents' wishes. Detox, not a problem. I usually ask what kind they're doing, what kind they have done. Very often they've already done it anyhow.
But what if they want to, like, they want to do homeopathic, so-called homeopathic detox? What do you say?
Oh, homeopathic detox. I don't. That's kind of like drainage therapy. I don't know much about that. I generally steer away from it. There's quite a lot out there. It's generally, what it generally is that's part of the supplement type of thing. Supplements, a lot of people who take supplements, a lot of people who push the supplements, a lot of people who practice supplements, and the whole diet thing, they'll add homeopathic remedy to detox. And what I try to explain is that these are generally not people who are very well versed in homeopathy, and it just adding it as a it's just one more thing in the tool belt, but it's not homeopathy. And I haven't seen too many people doing homeopathic detox, so as far as that specifically is concerned, I'm not so sure. But in the regimen that people put the children on, you'll see it at times, and it's just not necessary. It doesn't help, really.
What I tell people is that the right remedy that's classically prescribed will slowly enable the body to detox itself. That the metals will come out as they should once the body is properly stimulated with the right remedy, but it might be a little slower. People are very obsessed with that. You know, the truth is, I think that, you know, we all have metals and this and that in the body, but if the behavior is improving, that's all that matters, not some number on a test.
That's very true. That is very, very true. I remember a case, for example, of it was extreme urinary tract infection, when the patient came back, she had taken antibiotics many, many, many times, and she said that she had the smell of antibiotics. And then it passed for about a week. I couldn't believe it. It was like it was coming out of me. So, yes, like you say, the proper remedy will detox in the right way. We can't undervalue the order and the wisdom of nature for doing the right thing with the right thing. Interfering, which is what detox is very often, will do just that. It will interfere. At times, it can make a mess out of things, and that's what you end up with. So, not big on detox. If parents have already done it, fine. If they want to do it, I try to steer away, because it's true that with the proper remedy, all things come into focus. All things get better. And in that sense, whatever needs to be out will go out.
So do you have any other things? We're kind of coming to an end here. Any other things you'd like to tell parents about your... Well, before we also close, I want to give people, like, your website. It's homeopathicservices.com. Is that what it is?
Homeopathic Services, yeah. Pluralservices.com. I'm located in Manhattan, by Columbus Circle on 57th Street, pretty much midtown Manhattan. Not much more to add besides my absolute admiration. lengthy articles that was solely based on the parents' challenges and concerns and dedication to their children. Of course, I have unlimited regard for the parents dealing with this particular with this children, because the child, very often the child is, most of the stories that you hear is, my child was fine until a year and a half. That means they had like a taste of this great child came into this world, was absolutely perfectly normal, and then after a year and a half, this child started to drift out. And so they had like, they were happy, they would, you know, they enjoy the child, and then something happens, whatever it is, and then the child starts to withdraw and move away from them. It's literally moving away from them, and I just can't imagine that. You see, I can put myself, I can have in the shoes, I can have empathy and all that, but I can't even imagine that. And so that child, I have so high regard and respect for the parents that it's one of the reasons why I specialize in this.
Well, we thank you. I know, having been there myself, and I was one of the lucky ones, you see. I just found homeopathy right away, and I didn't know about anything else, and it just worked right away. I was so lucky. That's why I just keep doing this, even though, you know, my son is now 15 years old, and he's fine, you know.
Brilliant.
Yeah, you just have to, it's because of that I just keep, you know, trying to help other people discover this. And thank you to you, Pierre, for being one of the homeopaths who helps these kids, because there's really not that many, you know, homeopaths who specialize in this, and you're one of them. So,
well, I try.
So thank you.
Right. Thank you to you.
Thank you. So I'm gonna pause the program, and then I'll say goodbye. So hold on, okay?
Great. Yeah.
Well, that's about it. It's the end of our show. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Pierre, and I know his accent. He has a French accent. I hope it wasn't a problem for most of you understanding it. I just want to remind all of you once again to check out the ImpossibleCure.com website, the National Center for Homeopathy.org website, and also a really useful site, Homeopathy for Special Needs Children. That's homeopathysnc.org. And you can find out how to join this Yahoo group. It's a Yahoo group that's for parents of special needs children, and there's many homeopaths, including Pierre, who contribute to this list, and me as well, and other, especially homeopaths who deal with autistic children. So with that, I hope you have a happy new year, and I'll be talking to you in February. And until then, remember that there really is hope with homeopathy.